Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon. An exciting guest this week, our Women's British Open champion, Sophia Popoff. In-person interview. Did it in North Scottsdale. That was exciting. Obviously, a whirlwind last few weeks for her after the victory. And we talked about everything. We hit on her run through the Cactus Tour this year and how helpful that was to get some wins under her belt professionally. Obviously, the week that was at Royal Troon and the victory there. We talked driver off the deck. I said this in the interview. Her driver off the deck on Saturday, it might be the best driver off the deck in the history of major championship golf. I would love to hear from people that have an answer better than that, because I was trying to rack my brain and think of one that the winner pulled off, and I can't really come up with a great one. I don't think Mo hit driver. I think it was a three wood that she hit when it hit the flag stick and nearly went in when she won the British Open. So if you have a great driver off the deck for a major championship title story, I mean, nobody hits driver off the deck at Augusta, I don't think. Maybe on eight. I can't really think of a great one that got close for the winner. And of course, you don't see a lot of U.S. Opens and PGA Championships. The Open would be the one. Nothing really comes to mind. But we talked about a lot of stuff. You know, obviously the struggles that she went through professionally after having such a great career at USC, and what it's been like now being, you know, a person of interest that everybody's trying to get a hold of, including, you know, yours truly. I mean, obviously reaching out to get an interview was a big priority of mine, and I love getting a chance to do it in person. She's awesome. She's lovely. She's great. She's everything you'd want from someone that wins and has perspective and understanding of the situation and everything. And I think, you know, you go through stuff. You go through the not so great times of being a professional golfer, and things like this are sweeter and you appreciate them a lot more than maybe if everything went your way when you turned pro. So I love these types of stories. I think everybody does in sports. And I think you're really going to enjoy, you know, this particular podcast. If you don't listen to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, that's my other podcast. Just a reminder to give that one a listen. We have a lot of fun with it. Max opens up a lot about, you know, the ups and downs of professional golf and everything that he loves and things he'd love to see change. And he is awesome. He's just excellent at this. It's annoying how good he is at being a podcast co-host. So make sure you listen, subscribe to that. Let's get to Sophia. We welcome in Sophia Popoff in person.
Yay!
Here in Arizona. So before we get into, you know, your 2 weeks, can you run me through, like, Sunday on? You were obviously at Royal Troon. You win. And what has it been like? Because you've had to check a lot of boxes.
Yeah, it's been crazy. So I originally had planned to fly to Germany anyways. But then, you know, Sunday night, things went pretty late, obviously. And then, you know, a little bit of partying. Forgot to eat. That was fantastic. I wake up early in the morning and take a flight to Germany at like 6 a.m. And my management was like, well, we have a couple things lined up for you this week. And I'm just going like Monday from 9 to 5, just straight talking. And then the next day, the same thing. And I'm going like, is this what it's like? It was just very surreal because I've obviously never experienced anything like it. And then you've kind of got, they're a little bit different, but you're almost saying the same things.
Right.
And I'm saying in like multiple languages and I'm like, what is going on? And like, all these requests that normally I'm like happy to do a bunch of them, especially in Germany. But then I was like, well, I can't do 12 in one day. This is not going to work. So kind of organizing that, pretty stressful actually. And then you're scared that you're going to miss something. And it's like the Golf Channel interview and it's like, oh, we're live with Sophia. And then, you know, you never show up. And it's like, oh, well, I guess the screen's black.
We'll reschedule her. Obviously, the connection doesn't work. That's, by the way, a little TV thing. If you ever hear, we lost him in the connection or something didn't work, that means the person just didn't show up. But
yeah, exactly.
Wait, so how many languages do you speak?
So, well, I speak two languages. So I just kind of basically have been doing everything in German and English. Which is enough. My Spanish is not good enough. So please no Spanish requests. But yeah, so it's been all in dual, which is fine.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm sure you haven't talked to anyone about this. I think it's maybe the sneaky thing that happens when something huge occurs, especially in sport, is how much you're wanted. You know, like all of a sudden you go from somebody that would be happy to do anything that anybody wants to do, to all of a sudden you have 100 like this. You have 100 media requests. I mean, today you've got a few lined up as well. You know, you did a couple this morning. You're going to do some this afternoon. Has that been maybe the most surprising part, is the attention, you know, the instant attention to who you are and people want to hear what you have to say?
I think that's definitely been the biggest change, because I also have the, I don't know if it's a problem, but I like, I don't, I can't say no to people. I want to talk to people,
right.
And I'm just, that's my, the nature of my personality is like always talking to people. And like, I think it's always rude to turn people down. And so with my management, they said, well, it's totally fine if you say no to things. And I said, well, you know, they're taking time out of their lives. And they're like, no, this is not how this works.
Right. And I'm like, you're the subject now. You're the person they want to hear from. I want to ask and you don't have to pinpoint obviously who said it or who asked it. What's the worst question you've received thus far? Anyone stand out that you were like, I don't know about that one?
Well, yes.
Maybe the question I just asked could be the answer.
No, it stands out because it's so, I never say no comment, or I really don't want to comment on this, but on that one I had to, because it was from German media, and I'm not going to specifically say who it was,
right.
But literally the first question was, how were you able to financially support yourself the last 6 years? And did you take any money from your parents? I'm like, I just want the open. Like, is this really the first question? I was like, this is so rude. I'm happy to discuss that with you off record.
Right.
Like, but it's not, it's kind of none of your business.
Yeah.
See, you know,
I'm like, that we get by is how we get by. By the way, I do have two financial questions. I'll scratch those from my list. So I apologize. So, you know, I mean, what is so appealing about your story, as you know, is, I mean, and Cinderella story is what people always go to. I mean, you're 304th in the world, and this is your first LPGA victory. But, you know, I don't know if people understand how competitive mini tour golf can be and how important it is to win. I mean, I played mini tour golf back in my heyday, not very successfully. Obviously, that's why I'm doing this. But, you know, I mean, I was out there and Kevin Streelman was playing, and you had Steve Marino. I mean, these guys that had made it and have won on the PGA Tour are out there. So I just want to go through your mini tour run to kind of set this up, because it's incredibly impressive. So you win your first event in April. You win it at True North, correct? You win by a couple shots.
Yeah.
You play well. And that was a huge moment for you, because that was your first professional victory, right?
Correct. So actually my first one was at, let me remember.
I think I have it here. Hold on. Sun City. Sun City.
So Sun City was my first one. And then I won the week after at Las Colinas. And then I think I had two, I came in like second and third, maybe the next two. And then I won True North. True North was actually my last one.
Okay.
But it was like, it was the first one in Sun City was so cool because I hadn't won as a professional. And I think for me, regardless of how small the field is, you know, I had a really cool head-to-head battle with Sarah Burnham, and she's been playing really well on LPGA. So it's been that, I think that to me was a little bit of a breakthrough, because then it was kind of like, okay, now you have your first win. You don't even have to think about it. Even if you're in contention on Symetra Tour or LPGA or wherever, you don't have that added pressure of, you know, she just can't win as
right.
a professional. So that was very, like, that was my biggest kind of, you know, victory, or maybe mental victory that I was able to kind of celebrate after the Cactus Tour events.
And just real quick at Las Colinas, 61, 69, 64, you shot 61. I was looking, two pars on par fives as well with your 61.
Yeah.
Now you eagled the other two par fives, which helps, but you were on the verge of something dirty that day.
It was weird, because you know how you just kind of play and then you're making birdies and you're like, okay, cool. And putts are dropping and I'm barely even looking at the line.
We don't know this, but keep going. Yes. Let's hear from you.
No. Even my dad said, I have these days where I just see the ball going in. And I'm like, Dad, that's how I felt that day. And like, I just kind of maybe hit it a little bit better tee to green, but it was just one of those days where everything was kind of working and I didn't even think about it. I said, okay, you know, this is just fun. And I was playing with a good friend of mine from Germany with Sophie, and it was just kind of very relaxed. We were talking about God knows what, but it was kind of one of those days. And then at some point I realized, I'm like 9 under now. And And I was like, what are we, is this a par 71 or a par 72? It was kind of one of those rounds. And I actually wish I had thought about it a little bit earlier, because I was like not even pushing very hard in the middle. And I was like, well, maybe I should have. But then again, you know, maybe if I did that, it
would have been 65 and exactly. Not 60. Was that your low competitive round, 61? Or
yes. Yeah, by two shots. Okay. I think I shot 63 in college and a couple times professionally, but 61 was best.
What? Now, you three Cactus Tour wins, you know, before you get to the Open. What has changed? What has clicked for you this year, especially, you know, maybe the last 4 or 5 months that maybe wasn't working for you as you were out grinding and trying to compete?
I think that over the last, like us, well, let's say we never have a very long off season.
Right.
Whether you're LPGA or Symetra, you maybe have a month, top 2 months maybe to you know, figure everything out going into season. And you want to take some time off there too. And so here we are. I played my first Symetra Tour event. It was all right. And then we go into quarantine. And I think quarantine, people are like, what are we doing? And I'll just take off of golf. Like, I'll just, you know,
take time off
and not play at all. And I said, how can I best use this time effectively? And I think the thing that I work on the least and that I worked on the most during quarantine was my mental game. I think I always put it off. I was always like, it's not that bad. And then, you know, I go out again and I get frustrated after a couple of holes, after not even playing bad, but I get so frustrated and it affects the rest of my holes that day. And I was so, and I never really, you know, thought it was that big of a deal. But, my boyfriend said too, he said, you know, this is some time you can use to read books, listen to some audiobooks, really, or work with someone. And so what I did is I read a bunch of books. I worked on it. We had a game that we played. Every time we played, we played the game that you are not allowed to comment on any of your shots. And that is brutal.
So I mean, no reaction at all.
Like, I was kind of more Jordan Spieth-esque, just out there like,
you're always
you've
yelling.
Got to be kidding me. What was that? So no word. You can't, whether it was good or bad, you can't say anything. And it was the hardest thing ever. He said, okay, it's going to be $1 per comment. I said, all right. So, I mean, here we are. It's money. I don't want to lose. And that really helped me. And we continued doing that game. We did it all two weeks ago during the Open. And I think the mental part of the game is what improved the most over the last 5 months.
So you play that game, you're reading books. Would you consider yourself someone that was frustrated on the golf course? Were you negative on the golf course? I mean, would you let one thing hang over their whole round? Is that what you were doing? And that's something you've kind of let go?
Yeah, I think, and I have no problem being honest about that, is that I would kind of, a little bit of negative spiral. If I was playing well, fine. If not, I didn't get obviously frustrated on the golf course, but it was negative talk. I'd be walking next to my caddy or whatever, my boyfriend, and I'd be like, well, here we go again. And I was 6 under. Now I'm probably going to, you know, get in the clubhouse at even, like classic Sophia. That was myself.
Okay.
It was terrible. So it was just like negative self-talk and so unnecessary, like really. And I would only figure that out after the round. I said, why were you doing that? Like, why does that happen? And I think that was the hardest thing for me to change and work on and just be more, not even just positive on the golf course, but just neutral. Just
gotcha.
Don't say anything. Just take things as they are. And then just, you know, focus on every shot as a new shot.
Yeah. I played golf with James Hahn a couple of years ago, and you know, he had that long missed cut run and then he won the Wells Fargo. And I was talking to him and he said that he got in a place where it'd be Thursday afternoon and he'd be on like the 11th hole and he'd hit it in the fairway and it'd be in a divot. And he said he would look at his caddy and go, well, I'm going to miss the cut by one. And he would miss the cut by one. And he said he had to just, to your point, he had to just switch that off. And the moment he did, he goes out there and wins, you know, after all these missed cuts in a row. It's just so funny how the things can cloud your brain. And if you just let it go, then golf seems to be somewhat easy. Was there a round on the Cactus Tour where you felt like, okay, I've kind of got this under control?
You know, it was actually really interesting because the round that it was a specific round actually at True North where I had like a 4-shot lead and going to like the last four holes. And I knew it could be pretty comfortable, but I kind of second guessed it a little at that point. And I don't know why. Literally the widest fairway, I'm hitting hybrid off the tee. I hit hybrid into the desert. And I'm like, this is the most reliable club you have in the bag. Like when I play TrackMan simulator golf, I get some, like a lot of auto birdies with my hybrid. Like I love that club. So I'm just hitting in the desert. I go, what was that? And then I chipped out and made up and down from like 110 yards for par. And that, because I didn't get flustered about it, I just kind of continued playing. And that's why it's so vivid in my memory, because it was such a key moment for me, even though it seems like just this random hole in the middle of my like cactus tour, whatever career. But it was so, to me, so important, just that one hole, because I realized, all right, you're fine. Like as long as you keep, you know, your shots are there. So you just have to trust yourself and know that at any point you're capable of making up and down from anywhere. It's not, you know, you're not saying to yourself, well, here we go again. Here's a bogey.
Right.
One less like that.
Yeah, I don't want to have it. Now I have a 3-shot lead. I'm so nervous and all that.
Exactly.
And it's okay. One bad swing, I can handle it.
Exactly.
So Royal Troon, had you played it? Did you watch the Open with Phil and Stenson? I mean, was that something you paid attention to at all?
Yeah, so never played it, but actually Friday night, Max and I rewatched the back nine of that. Basically, I just call it a match between the two of
them.
That's
right.
And I did watch it live back in 2016, right? 2016. And it was incredible. And then Max said, you know what? We should really rewatch it. How fun would that be just to kind of see where they hit it, see what all that stuff. So I rewatched it. And honestly, I think I took a lot out of it, because the way that they were playing, both of them, was so aggressive, so confident. It felt like nothing, you know, when I look at Stenson, it was to me like he kind of knew, like, and that's the same feeling that I had on Sunday. It was just, I could be aggressive, you know, smart, but aggressive. And the shots were just there. Like everything, I knew it was fine, because the worst I'm going to do is just not that bad. So I think it helped me a lot.
You know, with the conditions, and I mean, I heard a Nelly Korda interview, I think on Thursday, and they were asking her, have you played anything like this? And she said, it's hard for me to walk in this. Like, that's how hard the wind was blowing. It wasn't just hard to play golf. It was hard to walk in the conditions, the gusty conditions. The problem with that is, if you go out and fire a round, awesome. You know, because a lot of people are going to shoot themselves out of the event. I always go back to Rory at St. Andrews in 2010. He shoots 63 the first day. He should have shot 62, honestly. He missed a bunny on 17. Shoots 80 the second round in high conditions. And then now all of a sudden you're out of the championship. So the conditions can kind of knock a lot of people out. You know, it can be frustrating. It's the whole Jack quote, right? I knew the guys complaining on the range had no real chance of winning this. When you looked at the weather, you saw it was going to be windier than hell. You know, were you like, let's use this to our advantage. Let's just go out there and lean on the wind and not let it frustrate us. And it goes back to your mental side.
Absolutely. I think that being on the range, it was very interesting, because literally my first shot on the range, I fell backwards because the gusts were so hard. And Max looked at me and said, what was that? I said, I couldn't hold myself.
My fadeaway shot.
Yeah. And then he just said, well, this should be really interesting today. And I said, okay, well, I don't know if I can just have a normal range session right now. So he said, well, why have a normal range session? Let's just hit. So he said, first shot, he said, here's your 4-iron. Hit this, try to hit that like a sign back there. We shot it. It was like 130 yards out. I hit like these low stingers. That was all I did for my warm-up, was just low stingers with every iron, pitching wedge low, 9-iron low, everything. And I got to the first tee and I looked at him. I said, honestly, I'm kind of excited. Like this is so brutal and it could be really fun. Like we're going to start shots 40 yards right. And they're going to just like drift in and be like, I think it's the coolest thing. And he said, yeah. And you know, it's going to be nice. Let's pick some good shots. Sometimes we want to hold some up into the wind. Sometimes we want to use the wind. And I think I honestly enjoyed that first round a lot, even though it was really brutal, but it was fun to me.
It's just, it's different golf. I mean, we get, especially here in Arizona, right, where there's barely any wind ever and conditions are nice most of the year. You like have a stock number and you hit it. And it's an 8-iron. It goes this far. All right, cool. That's the number. And you, you have like a hard time wavering. Oh man, I don't think it's a seven, you know? And it's like so weird. We have these, then you go across the pond or you go to Bandon Dunes and you play in 30 mile an hour winds. And all of a sudden you're hitting four irons from 85 yards and you go, I don't care. As long as I get it close to the hole, everything switches in our brain.
Yeah. It's a, that was like, that was so interesting. That first hole, I remember I had 126 yards and I was like, I don't think, I think this is a four iron. And Max looks at me, he goes, yeah, that actually, that seems right. And he's just like, just chip it up there. And I said, okay. So I hit these like shots where I'm almost gripping down to the shaft. And I basically just, to me, it's like a three quarter swing. I'm not sure if it's actually that short, but that's what it feels like to me. And it just comes off really low and the wind doesn't affect it as much. And I think I really enjoyed playing those shots. And so, but it was cool to see for me that on the weekend, I could switch back and actually hit normal shots again, because I was a little bit worried about that. I said, well, now we've been hitting like everything as high as this table. And now I just, what am I going to, like, what's my stock shot again? Like, how does this work? And he said, well, let's hit some balls on the range on Saturday morning. So let's hit some normal shots. And then it was fine though. Like everything was still there. I hadn't lost it.
You can still pull off a seven iron from where you like
to
hit it from.
Exactly.
Your Saturday round. I mean, where does that rank in terms of the best you've played? Just, I mean, as solidly as you can play in a big time moment.
It honestly felt like probably on a normal course in normal conditions, like a 62, 63 round to me, because it was still not easy. We still had gusts up to about 35 miles an hour. So it's pretty windy out there. Bogey free, I think, was just wild. I think I didn't even realize it until we got out to 18. And I said, well, I think we're bogey free right now, which is great. Again, those are the rounds
this is where your brain has been amazing.
Yeah. So that's the best thing. I'm like, I'm so glad at no point in my rounds, I was so occupied with just figuring out shots that I wasn't thinking about the score. All you're trying to figure out is like, okay, I got 176. Wind is from here. What do we think? It's all that. And so it's actually really exhausting. When you get off the round, you're just like so drained, but it's great because you don't think about where you're at every moment.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. So, boyfriend on the back, you've mentioned him a few times. Has he caddied a decent amount for you? Has he caddied a few times? Have you guys done that? I mean, this is a pretty big stage, you know? I mean, has he caddied in a few events?
He's honestly not very caddied very often. I think he caddied for me at a couple Symetra events and at an LPGA event my rookie year. So that's been like 5 years. And I mean, I think maybe a handful of times. I honestly can't remember him caddying more than about 5-6 times. So that was definitely, it was very interesting when we made the decision. I said, I need a caddy. And he said, I mean, this is awesome. I haven't seen you in 2 months because of, you know, COVID, and he had to fly back to Germany and his visa was expired. And I said, well, this is awesome. I get to see you and I get to play the British. Like, this is amazing.
he was like, we get to hang out and we're playing this pretty decent championship that we're going to be a part of. So how is y'all's relationship on the golf course? Because I mean, I caddied on the LPGA tour for a couple of my friends back in the day. I'm older than you, and Max Homa will let you know that. Let me tell you, but you know, I caddied in, and I did see some relationships out there that maybe were a bit testy on the golf course versus how they were in real life.
100%, and that's why he will caddy for me the rest of the season. Just because right now I think we're in a good spot, and I think we want to keep it that way, but at the same time, he's a golfer himself. He's not, you know, we both know technically there could be better people on my back. Like, I don't even know how to describe this. Like, we get along really well, but at the same time, we've had moments on the golf course in that caddy player relationship where it was like, meh, like, do we want to risk our whole relationship just for like a round of golf?
Just because for a five iron?
I know, exactly. I'm like, it's really nice when it works out this way, but when it doesn't work out, that's where it gets very testy. And I don't think I could do that like for the rest of my golf career. And he said the same thing. He said, oh, no. Next year I have my own, like, I want to play again. Like, I'm going to do my own thing, and I'll enjoy being with you the rest of this year because it's just like this crazy COVID year. But I think I'm back to like my normal lifestyle next
year.
Yeah.
So when I, you know, I tried to play professionally and it didn't work out. And then I caddied for a couple of friends. And I kind of always had this perception that caddying was, you have the bag, you have the number. Like I play, I know what to do. And the professional caddy, you know, the guys out there and the girls out there that professionally do it, it's a completely different ballgame. It took me 3 or 4 holes the first round I ever caddied Sophia to understand what they were stepping off. I was like, what are they stepping off? And they were like, oh, it's a dot for the next day. And I went, oh, I didn't know that was a job. You know, I didn't know that was something you're doing within the round to get ready for tomorrow. And then I always remember on Sunday, I always thought, I thought it was going to be the most stressful day. There's no stepping off the flags for tomorrow. So this is actually a pretty easy day. Driver off the deck hole. I was thinking about it for a couple of days. It might be the most famous driver off the deck shot in the history of major championship golf. I can't think of one that would beat that considering you won. Are you a driver off the deck player? Was that a one-time pull? What happened there?
No. I use that shot a lot. It's actually really interesting. I think like my first Symetra event back this year, I hit it 2 or 3 times on a par 5 because you have a little bit of a run up. So whenever I have a little bit of a gap and I can run it up and it's not super soft, and it's like we're like 260, 250, 260 out, and I know my 3 was just not going to get there, especially because it comes in a little bit higher. I love hitting driver off the deck. And it, to me, we were right in that it was 258, a little bit into the wind off the right, but it was like a nice lie. And I knew that I hit those pretty well, but I said, even if I don't, if I miss hit this, it doesn't really matter because it's going to be like a layup. So why don't we go for it? And Max immediately said, absolutely, like go for it. I'm all for it. And obviously turned out to be a really great shot. And it's very interesting. I don't know if you experience this, but like when I look through social media right now, people are like talking about drivers off the deck all the time. Tiger's driver off the deck here, and this guy's driver off the deck, and this guy's driver off the deck. And I'm like, what? Like, I feel like it's so weird to me because I feel like maybe it's just because I just hit that driver off the deck, but I feel like I'm hearing it everywhere right now. But it's kind of, people are paying attention more to it, like on the men's side right now, which is fine. But it was like a very funny thing. I don't know if it's that thing where you buy a car and then you see it everywhere.
Yes.
Maybe that's it, but it was really funny.
It's a shot, I think, that has made a little bit of a comeback. I mean, I think that to your point, especially now, and I mean, this is on both sides, men's and women's, is the launch of the 3-wood. You know, I did the match with Tiger and Phil. I was an on-course reporter for that for the first year up in Vegas. And they had 3-woods from like 300 in on one hole. And I remember standing there. And I mean, I play golf with pro golfers occasionally. I mean, I've seen it. And I just remember they both hit 3-woods. And I couldn't believe how high they launched it off the ground. But with that being the case, if you need to hit one low and run it up, it's a hard shot to hit if you're not used to pulling that off. And so the driver off the deck, I do feel like, is making a comeback still. I think you win this year. You win. This is arguably driver off the deck of the century, not just the year. You know, that's one of those things.
Thank you. I'll take that.
So I asked Homa for a question for you because he was very excited. And Max is a guy that has been very open about, you know, the great times about being a professional golfer, but also the times that it hasn't been so easy. And he asked me to ask you this. What was your motivation when you were at the lowest you were at in professional golf to suck it up and keep grinding?
So I think it's actually very interesting because I mentioned him in one of my interviews because people, I think it was like with Sky Sports, and they asked me pretty much exactly that question. And I said, you know, I'm not the first person to be in this position, especially golfers go through really intense highs and really intense lows. And I think that, you know, you kind of get, I got to this point about 3 years ago where I finally got my Lyme disease diagnosis, and it was just very hard for me because I was like, I need to physically get fit again and then mentally get to the spot where I feel, I want to get back into a tournament and feel like I'm here for all the right reasons and I can win this, no problem. That's how I was in college. When I was in college, every tournament we played, I said, well, I'm here. I'm the one to be beat.
Right.
And which is like, this is not, you know, I don't want to sound cocky or anything, but that was my mindset and my confidence level at that time. And that confidence just completely went away because I think all the expectations that I had after my amateur career were like, I don't even know. I would say there were, I crushed people's like kind of dreams, especially in Germany, of becoming like the next German player to come out after Caroline and Sandra. And I think it was, I had this, like, mentally it weighed so heavy on me that I couldn't fulfill expectations, and I couldn't fulfill my own expectations, knowing where I can be and not being able to perform. Worst thing ever to go through. And at the same time, you're on the golf course, things are kind of going sideways, and you don't know why you're trying to, and people are like, well, honestly, you've just lost 20 pounds. Like, maybe you should start getting into like a physical spot where you can actually expect yourself to be there. And I was like, no, I can do it. I know I can. And so frustrating for about 3 or 4 years there. And then finally 2018, I started having a pretty decent year on LPGA again and regaining confidence, but I knew my mental game was still not where it had to be. And so just grinding that out and barely missing out on my card in 2017, 18, 19, all 3 years, like, I got it to conditional status 2 of the years. And then after last year, I missed my, by just literally one shot, I missed my status for this year. And I think, like, you know, in that, when you're in that position, you're like, this is the worst possible thing. It's just such a blow to your whole system. You're like, why again? Like, why? This has been 6 years of this. Like, I know I can compete with these girls, but now I have to start all over again. And that was why I seriously considered quitting last year, because I said, am I going to get to that point? I know my physically, like, ability, I can, but can I, like, mentally get to that spot? And I think that was the hardest thing for me to get through.
It has happened on the, and I know Solly and you mentioned this on the No Line Up podcast about the age and the age of being a professional and expecting things, and how, and the LPGA tour has been younger than the PGA tour, but the PGA tour is going that way as well. I mean, you're seeing guys come out of college early and expect to win. The LPGA has been like that for a long time, where you're seeing 18, 19, 20 year olds come out and dominate. And you get to 30 and all of a sudden you're this vet that, you know, it's like, oh, my great years are behind me, you know? And so I'm sure there's pressure there, right? I mean, you're a four-time All-American, you come out of USC, you're this stud, everybody's expecting great things, they don't happen, and time's ticking, right? So the time ticks away and you're going, how much longer can I do this?
Well, absolutely. And yeah, I did, I talked to Solly about that, and it was kind of like, as females, we also have that added pressure of, you know, you have your biological clock, you need to figure out when are you going to start all that? And so how much time am I going to give myself? And did I miss my prime, or am I now my prime? And now looking back, and obviously with this win, things that become a little bit clearer to me too, are like, everyone, you know, everyone has their prime at a different time, or everyone breaks through at a different time. And it doesn't have to be, you know, Mo Martin's the greatest example of that. I mean, she grinds it out for years on Symetra Tour. Same thing. She wins the Open. And it's like, and after that, you know, her confidence level's high, and it's just, you never know when it is. And my expectation was for it to be way earlier. And then I'm 27, you know, turning 28 this year. And I'm thinking, oof, man, 2 years until I'm 30. And like, talking to my boyfriend, I'm like, what's the deal here? Like, what am I doing? And I think it was really great that he always took all the pressure off. He said, you're not old by any means. Like, you know, we're now, they always say 30 is the new 20 and all that stuff. And I said, well, okay, maybe, but I'm not sure. I'm like, tell me again when I'm actually 30. That's the new 20. Cause like, I'm not sure I feel
buy
that
me
way.
The shirt. I'll make it my Instagram post. I'm good to
exactly,
go.
Exactly. And then, but it kind of like just really took a lot of pressure off of, you know, my golf game. And end of last year, I gave myself that ultimatum. I said, you know, I'll give yourself until you're 30. See where it goes. And I think that actually took some pressure off, because I realized, okay, you have almost 3 years, although two of them were going to be Symetra years, right? So I think it was like a little bit, and now obviously with everything expedited a little, I think that's been really nice for me too. And just, you know, it just takes a lot of pressure off this whole clock thing,
yes.
Internal clock.
I mean, and that, again, this goes back to professional golf. And I mean, I wonder, Max, the kind of the second part of Max's question was, you know, do you feel like you're better now as a professional golfer considering what you went through? And you know, you look through, you go, why am I still doing this? You have days on the range. Why am I still grinding? You shoot 76 in a tournament. And you've been playing great. And you're like, what the hell happened there? How can I shoot that number? Even to your point about the hybrid, how do I hit a hybrid in the desert? And then you finally have this switch. And I would say the switch was, I mean, people are going to focus on the Open. I mean, the switch, at least from what I've read and looked at, was the Cactus Tour wins. I mean, you being able to run through there and win three times in four events or whatever, you know, that's the click where you go, I can do this, I can win. And then, you know, you go win this enormous major championship and you have all of that behind you that you went through to get here. I mean, it makes you stronger, right?
100%. You know, now looking back, and especially the mental state I was in from Cactus Tour on to the win, as a player, I feel way more, you know, experienced, ready to go. Like, I wasn't this player 3 or 4 years ago. I don't even know if I was this player in college. Like, I really don't think so. I think this, when you go through all that stuff, it makes you so much, I don't know, it just puts you, like, makes a more full player. Like, I don't know, just all the facets of a great golfer. Like, I think they hadn't for me come together yet before this week. Like, for me, that, I think that mental game that I had that week was just the thing that I had been missing for a long time. And you know, where you're like, you know, we talked about this earlier and we said, like, these, you know, the people that keep missing cuts and they go, I'm so close. Because yes, they have these rounds that are like 73, 74 that could have easily been 68, 69 had they made a couple key putts, or had they been a little bit more, maybe a little bit better off the tee box towards the end of their second round. Like, they're so small. Those are all just confidence and mental errors that happen right there. So, you know, where everyone goes, oh my God, here we go again. And now he or she is talking about how they missed a cut by one. Those are really, we don't just say that. It's actually that way where we're working so hard and we're so close, but we're trying to find that little thing that I found during Cactus Tour this year where, okay, like, this is what I have to do. And my attitude has to be better and I need to play smarter. I did a lot of decade golf stuff, and those two things coming together and just accepting certain misses and all that, I think that was what I was missing the whole time.
So you already mentioned the thing you said you might, you know, you had a time where you were going to step away from golf. I looked online, you did some TV work during the Solheim Cup. So what were you thinking you would do if golf didn't work out? Were you going to think about going down that road? And also, I wanted you to give us a grade on how you were on TV in your Solheim Cup debut.
So I'm definitely going to be serious competition to you guys.
Okay, I'm nervous already. I know. I can already tell you can speak, you're nice, you know, you smile. Yes. It's like, these are all the check marks, right?
I know. Watch out. I'm coming.
You now have a major. Now, I mean, these are like huge check marks.
But now you guys have a couple more years.
We've got some time
before I, you know, hit the sports journalism side of things. And I obviously broadcast that week. Actually, I had so much fun. I think, you know, I wanted to be at the compound at 5:30 in the morning because I was so ready to go. I was like, let's do this. Pumped up. I couldn't even sleep at night because I was so excited about what I was doing. And I think from all the feedback that I got, I would give myself a pretty good grade. But I just think that that's something I want to do so badly one day. And I think that's what made it very hard for me at the point that I was in last year to not question whether I was going to continue playing golf or not. Like, I had to question that because I knew I had a couple internships lined up and I had a lot of opportunities that I could have taken back then. And obviously now looking back, I'm glad I didn't. And I'm sure everything, you know, happens for a reason. But sometime down the road, I'm very excited to pursue that and get into, I don't even know, maybe golf, maybe just general sports, but like anything in that area. I'm pretty excited about that.
So I got a couple more for you. One is, you know, I feel like we hear a lot in the golf world about the differences in the Korn Ferry and the PGA Tour, you know, and even the European Tour and the PGA Tour. Something I don't hear a lot about is the differences in the Symetra Tour and the LPGA. And by this, I mean, not the golf, you know, like away from the golf, the camaraderie, the friendships, how the players travel and deal with all of the stuff to get to events. So can you just enlighten us a little bit on the differences in your experiences Symetra versus your experiences on the LPGA Tour?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference is the camaraderie thing. On Symetra Tour, I have a group of friends and we're very close. We, in the previous years, we always traveled together, and that's been a little bit tougher this year, but still we're still very good friends, and here and there we can room with one person. And so it's been, I think the, you know, I noticed that the most after my win was all my friends from Symetra called me and they were in tears. And I was like, I am not used to this. This on the LPGA, yes, you get a lot of congratulations. And then my closest friends, obviously, they're really happy for me. But, you know, everyone kind of does their own thing and everyone has their little entourages. Maybe some do, some don't. But everyone has their own way of going about things. And my way is, I think, a little bit different. Like, I'm pretty, I like to be pretty, like, relaxed and fun and do other stuff. Like, I love, when I go to a tournament week, I look at what hikes are around here. Can we surf? Can we do, what can we do? And now I think, you know, with winning this tournament, I think one of the most exciting parts is that, you know, and Van Damme is my best friend. So I get to finally travel with her full time. We're so excited about that. And we can do all this stuff because she's the same person, or like, she's also kind of made me into that person too. So
we golf are, isn't your entire life.
Yes. We have like other things that we love to do and we want to keep a really good balance. And I think on Symetra Tour, you have a lot of people like that. On an LPGA, people are very
singular,
yes,
focus.
Yeah. Singular focus. It's all golf, 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 golf. And at the end of every week, I'm like, okay, like, What else is there to talk about golf anymore.
I'm done with the golf conversation.
I want a paddleboard by myself and I don't want to talk to anyone. Like that's my mindset.
When you caddied for Van Damme, to your boyfriend's point, you're a professional golfer. How hard was it to you? I mean, I know you play a lot of golf with her, but like she bombs it, right? And she beats it. She's the longest driver on the LPGA tour, right?
So, yeah.
Was it hard for you to get the numbers? Were you kind of on to them pretty early? Or you're like, is she, in your mind, are you going, is she really hitting an 8-iron from here?
No, it's actually really funny because I very quickly realized after we were on TrackMan on the range that she hits it exactly the same distance as I do in meters. So everything like my, it was so easy. My 8-iron goes 145 and hers goes 145 meters. And I'm like, well, this is easy. And so it was so funny because at the end of the tournament, she said, Sophia, like I've never had a caddy in my life who has figured out my distances so quickly and has given me the right clubs all the time. Like you were never wrong. And there was one key shot where I was like, I think we were at 209 meters. So that's about 229, roughly 230. And the wind was in two off the right. And, you know, that's the kind of distance where I'm just smashing three wood, like, and hoping it gets there. And she was like, oh, I don't know if it's like a five wood or a three wood. And I was like, you know what? I think five wood all day. And she said, oh, I just don't know if it's going to get there. I'm like, no, it's going to get there. I'm pretty sure. And then she goes, all right, I'm going to smash five wood. And she hits it to like 4 feet, like the most incredible shot I think I've like ever seen. And she goes, good club caddy. I was like, yeah, I really appreciate that. Cause I felt like I actually gave her that club. But you know, sometimes it was incredible to see, like it would be pouring rain and it'd be 165 meters, which is like 181 yards, pouring rain. And she'd be like, and we would be between like a 7 and a 6 iron. And I'm like, and we'd be like, 7's going to get there. And then 7 gets there. And it's just for me, like,
you're amazed.
I'm
this
pretty
is the
sure
club.
I'd be smashing 5 iron at this point, you know? And so I'm like, just amazed that that's a club. So it was very cool to see, but at the same time, just to strategize with her on the golf course, because that part doesn't change whether I'm hitting the ball or she's right. hitting the ball. I think that helped me a lot going into the next few weeks.
I bet. I got to touch on this, you know, before we go, obviously, you know, one of the big stories that came out of all this was, you know, the amount of time you're getting in terms of your exemptions and on the LPGA tour, typically it'd be 5 years. You're not, I guess, technically an LPGA tour member. Was that the wording? You're not an LPGA tour member. So you get 2 years, basically.
Yeah. So I get the rest of this year and next year. So I wouldn't even really call it 2 years.
Okay,
I would call it a year and a half. Unless I misunderstood something, because I know Mike said 2 years, but
finished this season. So either 2 years or a year and a half, whatever it is. And then you're not in the majors in 2020. And that's because they set them all same thing they're doing with the Masters, where they set it all, you know, pre-COVID. You know, it's a one of my, the COVID bingo terms is fluid situation. You know, people say fluid situation a lot. I mean, the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour are very, very different. I mean, and the number one thing is simply the money. I mean, it's just PGA Tour players, if you're a top 20 or 30 player, you never have to stress about money your entire life. It's not even a thing on your mind. If you're a top 20 or 30 LPGA player, there are a few who are set and who have deals and who make a lot of money. But I mean, you get to 35, 40, 45 on the money list, and life isn't private jets and BMW cars waiting for you at the airport. So I'm a huge Mike Wan fan. I had him on this podcast just about a month and a half ago. I did love what he did. I love the way he approached it. I'm sure you respected it as well. But there is, he did leave some wiggle room in terms of hopefully changing that. And if we call it the pop-off rule, that'd be awesome. I mean, just something to change this and hopefully lean on it. Because again, I think the point here, and something you obviously know, is, you know, 5 years, you talked about family and having a kid and all these things. I mean, these things play into it. And 5 years is a long time to feel secure in your job.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I obviously respect their decision completely. You know, those are the LPGA rules and regulations, and you can't just change those. So to me, it was a definite, I wasn't going to fight them on that. You know, it was, I respect that. And I think Mike said it really well in his press conference, and that's the way things are. And he sent me a really nice email congratulating me, and we have a good relationship. And that's something I would never want to jeopardize, because, you know, I still have my year and a half exemption. And I think the one thing that I was disappointed about, and why I felt like my situation was different from, let's say, someone like Shibuno last year, was that I had played four seasons on LPGA.
Right.
And this is my first season back again where I'm just only on Symetra. And Symetra is a developmental tour of the LPGA. And I'm thinking, you kind of want to support your players like that, that you give them that five-year exemption, because 5 years of, you know, your job is job security, exactly like you said. I think the way I think about it now is I'm saying, you know, good golf takes care of itself. So I'm just going to have to go out and I'm going to have to play well. And that's just the way it is. And that's fine, because you can't change it. Although he did leave some wiggle room. And obviously I think, you know, we might go into some negotiations at the end of the year, but
hopefully,
you know, you never know. But I would love for that rule to change. And if it's not for me, then for the girls that come after me. And I think that's the biggest thing.
Well, I mean, your point, I mean, you're spot on there, is this is the dream scenario for the Symetra Tour. If you really think about it, right? Your story is a dream situation. I mean, the dream would be a Symetra Tour player who wins an LPGA event, right? And that's the dream thing. Now, you want a major championship. So if you're thinking about how to develop players into the top tier professionals, this is it. I mean, you went through the grinds of Symetra, you played mini tour golf, you did everything. You missed out on a card by one single effing shot. And it's like, you know, if we've learned anything in 2020, it's that we can change stuff kind of quickly. And I'm praying, fingers crossed, everything that this does change, because you deserve it. And B, it is too logical not. So I will speak for you if you don't mind in saying that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I'm here. Last thing. Who was the most random or most famous, most surprising congratulatory text, call, email you got? And if you have multiple, we will listen to multiple.
Well, I think I got some from, which is really nice, from people I haven't heard from in a long time, like my athletic director when I was at USC, Pat Hayden, JK McKay, who was the assistant athletic director. And those were some like really cool ones. And from people I haven't heard from in a long time, but it was very cool through this whole thing. And obviously, also the exemption stuff that happened after, I got some congratulatory messages from, like, on my social media from like big name guy players, where I was like, Ian Poulter just like sent me a message and congratulated me. And I was like, this is the coolest thing. These are the guys I look up to. On the men's tour, like, obviously I'm a big fan of European players too, just because I'm European, but it was like, you know, Tommy Fleetwood reaching out, like stuff like that, where, to me, where I'm like, oh my God, like these people kind of know me now, which is a little bit surreal, I think. But at the same time, you know, I honestly, the ones I was most excited about were just people that I worked with over the years,
right,
that reached out to me. And we're like, you know, all the stuff that we went through and all that. And it's just, those made me probably the most emotional, just because I think they can relate to what I went through and where I am now.
Yeah, it's going back to, you know, when things weren't great. I mean, these are the people you're leaning on, you know, when the game wasn't exactly where you wanted it to be. And then now you get to this point, it's like you guys can all appreciate the moment. You can exactly. all appreciate the trophy. I mean, it's one trophy, right? But it's like, you know, so much something you can share with so many people that have like walked through life. So you're back in Arizona. You've still got media stuff. You've still got things going on. At what point do you feel like life's going to be 75% normal?
I think it's going to take a little bit because I think next week's going to be probably the first week where I can actually just fully focus back on practicing and getting ready for Portland. But even going to Portland, I think it's going to be different teeing it up there. I think I'm going to have a different tee time than what I'm used to having. Like you know, all these little things.
You know what? You're not going to have to wake up at 4 a.m.
I know exactly. I'm not going to have that 7 a.m. or the 2 p.m., the one that I really love. So I'm assuming, but it's going to be just a little bit different, I think, from the media attention and stuff like that. You know, I have to be realistic about that. But I'm hoping within the next few weeks, things will just kind of get back to normal and I can kind of focus on everything I've been doing. But I hope that, just as like when you say like things get back to normal for you and your lifestyle. I mean, I hope that with everything that I'm doing right now, I basically my personality doesn't change and the kind of person that I am.
Right.
Just a little bit more, a couple more appointments here and there. But I'm hoping that like things settle and I could just be me and not be rude to people.
just still be nice. That's
exactly,
the key, right? Just
exactly.
Be kind to people.
Exactly.
Is this now last thing? Is this the first interview you've done where the person that's interviewing you brought you gifts?
This is the first one. Yeah.
Multiple gifts?
Yeah, multiple gifts.
A koozie and golf tees. You don't have to use them. You don't have to use any of this stuff.
Yeah, but
I just wanted
cool.
to bring, I wanted to bring
the right
you something.
Length. They have the right tee. There's nothing worse than someone showing up with like tees that are, you know, that those really long ones.
Or the plastic ones.
Or the plastic ones.
Get the plastic ones out of my face. Out of my face. Sophia, I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
A big thanks to Sophia for joining and giving us all that time. It was excellent. One of my favorite interviews I've ever done on this here podcast. And I've done a lot for a lot of years. So that was just, you know, everything you'd want to hear from someone that is so appreciative of the opportunity and what comes with it and the victory, of course. And I asked her after weird things she's drank out of the trophy and all I got was champagne. And she said she had a couple of beers, I think, and some champagne out of it. So hopefully, you know, maybe the weirder liquids poured into the open trophy will come. Thanks so much for listening and subscribing. We'll be back soon with another guest. Hope you guys have a great week. Hope you get a chance to get out and play a little bit of golf. And hey, give yourself that 3-footer. You deserve it. The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.